All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and we're focusing on the energy sector, more specifically oil and natural gas, as we are chatting with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. Dan, I want to get right into it in terms of natural gas. Natural gas has been on, in a way, a waterfall decline here. Back about a month ago, natural gas futures were just over $3. As of a few days ago, I guess earlier this week, prices dropped the whole way down into about the $1.50 range. We haven't seen these levels since back in 2020. Yes, I realize it's been, I guess, a warmer summer overall, but fact of the matter is, this is a very depressed price for natural gas. Dan, in your eyes, why has natural gas gone through such a correction now back to some very, very historically low levels?
Well, when we had the really cold weather spell in January, a lot of, I call them the paper traders. These are funds that just trade the futures market. And the price you see every day on natural gas is the front month futures contract, which today it's the March 24 futures contract, which will be closing next week. So all these hedge funds and stuff went long, and then they had to cover. So they, when the price started going down, they're all panicking to cover, and nobody's willing to take those long contracts. So it craters. Then after a while, they start shorting. Then on the other side, you got other hedge funds that start shorting gas, looking at the weather forecast, thinking that we got enough gas in storage to make it through the winter. We don't need any more gas supply. And so they start shorting it, which happened here today on Wednesday, is with it up 12%. It's because all it takes is one big hedge fund, one big paper trader that has to cover his short positions. Because if you're just a hedge fund, you don't own any physical gas supply. If you wait till that contract expires, you have to cover. It's like selling stocks, selling naked calls. So if you sell calls on your stock, and then somebody calls you, if you don't really own the stock, you have to go out in the physical market and buy the stock to cover that short call position, that call that you sold. You have to cover it. So that's what they're doing in this. So on Wednesday, we're getting this spike because there's a panic in that, and they're having to cover their short position. So there's no way that the right price for gas is below $2, and probably not even close to below $2.50. It's just too valuable to our economy. The other thing is, because of the higher interest rates, you would think, okay, if you're a utility that can actually store that gas and use it next winter or this coming summer for power generation, why aren't the utilities grabbing up these really cheap contracts so they do take delivery on the physical supply? Well, because you have a high interest rate and because you're going to have to pay storage fees on that gas if you buy it and put it in storage, they don't want that unless they got a huge credit line where they can get funding to cover those interest costs and the storage fees. They don't want to do it either. So you got nobody willing to take those long positions, and that's what does this. But you know, if you look at the NYMEX strip today, the gas price is like $3.25 or something for December, and then the first quarter of next year it's all above $3 because people see what's coming. We're going to need more gas in storage because we got these big LNG export facilities coming online here in the next few months.
Well, Dan, let's dig into that a little bit more, because we hear a lot about these LNG facilities. We also hear about some of the coal power plants converting to nat gas power plants. So from a demand side, like you say, it's surprising to see natural gas under $3, under $2, definitely in the mid ones. So do you think that the market is missing something here? Why aren't more people front running the demand side of the equation here?
Well, there is much more natural gas being used for power generation now, because all the utilities do have the flexibility to switch from coal to natural gas for power generation. Of course, when it's below $2, they're going to do that as much as they can. So that's one. But the other thing is, we used to have a lot more coal-fired power plants. So there was a lot more of that, they have fuel switching capability available. So we don't have quite as much this year. But what's going to solve the problem is the LNG facilities. And a big one comes online here in about 6 months. That's Plaquemines down in Louisiana. And shortly after that, you've got another train coming online at Corpus Christi. And you got the golden one that's Exxon's facility that's coming also online in the first quarter. The first train of that comes online. So within 12 months, by this time next year, demand for U.S. gas will be about 5 BCF a day higher than it is today just for the LNG export capacity.
So to Shad's question, why isn't the market front-running this? If we have timelines on when demand's going to spike, why are investors not getting ahead of this?
Well, if somebody really wanted to, you know, go long and take delivery of that cheap gas now and immediately sell short so that they could deliver that gas in about 6 months, you know, into the, when the prices go up in the winter, yeah, there's probably some money to be made there. But, you know, to do it in a large number of contracts, to do, you know, a lot, like BCFs of gas, you got to have a hell of a credit line because you got to hold it and you got to pay storage fees. Because it goes into a cavern someplace down in Louisiana, and you got to, down by Henry up Louisiana, and you've got to pay the storage fees on it.
Well, Dan, just from the company side of things, how do you think nat gas companies, well, what are they doing as far as right now? How are they reacting? And then what do you think their strategy will be moving forward?
Well, the thing, you know, if you're going to invest in the actual companies is to, number one, look at their hedging policy. Like EQT has got like 40%. EQT is the largest natural gas producer in North America right now. It's going to be surpassed when Chesapeake closes this deal with Southwestern. But it right now, it's like 6 BCF a day of gas. They've hedged like 40% of this year's production is hedged at over 350. So they're not really being hurt. And they produce a lot of NGLs. And NGLs, natural gas liquids, primarily propane and butane. This is going to show you what's going to happen when we get all this LNG export capacity online. This year, we got a lot more export capacity online for both propane and butane. And we did have a big propane surplus in storage, but that January weather combined with a lot more ships coming online that could haul NGLs, it just cratered. The propane in storage went from a big surplus to below the five-year average, like over 2 months. It happened just incredibly fast. And so now propane prices are really, really high. Propane prices are like at a two-year high right now.
Dan, the biggest question here, and something that we have heard from some commentators, is simply does North America have too much natural gas because of the production coming out of the oil fields and also specific natural gas companies?
Yeah, in the short run, we do. And of course, we've got all these wells drilled for oil, like in the Permian Basin, they're drilling wells for oil and they don't care. We'll talk about Diamondback later. Diamondback's realized gas price was like $1.25. You know, there's a surplus of gas coming out of the Permian Basin because those guys, they have to give the, you know, they can't flare it. So they just have to give the gas oil most, but they don't care because they're making all their money on oil sales. Now, the good thing for them on the gas side is they are stripping out a lot of the liquids. So they're getting those high value NGLs, and that's really offsetting the lower gas price. So the thing is, if you invest in this sector and upstream companies, one of the first things you need to look at is the production mix. How much oil, how much natural gas, how much NGLs do they produce? And most of them produce all three. So they have a combination, all three. And liquids prices, you know, propane's up in the last month, 12-13%, you know, oil's up. So year over year, propane prices and oil prices are both up year over year. So that offsets the lower gas prices to some extent. So I'm focused on companies right now, but, you know, our Sweet 16 is heavily weighted to liquid sales.
Well, Dan, just one more question on the nat gas stock, just because I know a lot of people listening, that's what the world they play in. So I know that you've talked on our show before about companies like Comstock or Antero, or you just brought up EQT. You know, a lot of people in Canada are in Birchcliff. There's Range Resources. There's all these nat gas companies. Would you be avoiding those right now, or would you be positioning harder in those as a contrarian bet? How are you looking at it?
Well, we might be a day late the dollar short because all the gassers are up like 10 or 12% today. EQT is up like 12% Range in those two. Antero. Now, Comstock, I've dropped it from the Sweet 16. The reason I did is they are a pure dry gas producer. Their production comes from the Haynesville, and they're like 99% of their production is dry gas. They hardly have any NGLs, and they have almost no crude oil. I mean, only like 200 barrels a day of crude oil, period. So they are getting hurt, and they hedge about 20-25% of their oil, their gas at about 350. So that's helping them a little bit, but they've been outspending their cash flow because they're proving up and securing a bunch of acreage in what they call the Western Haynesville. Now, if you believe that, you know, we're going to get back to 350 or something, $4 within a year, then Comstock's got huge upside because they're heavily weighted to gas. And they're very close. They can sell their gas down into the Louisiana Gulf Coast. And those areas do get a premium for their gas. You know, there's a tier one area where there's so many LNG export facilities that they have strong demand down there. And it's down in South Louisiana.
Yeah, one thing I find interesting, even look at these natural gas stocks with natural gas, again, at kind of these 2020 lows, the stocks are still broadly off their lows, but well off some of their highs of just last year, a couple years ago. So something to consider there. Let's get some quick oil market commentary. Oil continues to, I guess, grind higher, we can say, as we're chatting. It's trading close to $80 a barrel, but it's kind of been stuck within this range of 70 to 80 for this whole year, even going back to November of last year. So, Dan, what's your outlook for oil here?
Well, my forecast is that we're going to have $80 oil average in the second quarter and $82.50 in the second half of the year. And I think we may even go higher than that in the second half of the year. Oil demand is seasonal. So we are just weeks away now from a rising period of demand. You also have some refineries that are doing a lot of maintenance right now. So, you know, think about it, the refiners are the purchasers of crude oil. We don't burn crude oil in our cars. You know, they have to refine it. So you got all these refineries doing annual maintenance. And then you got a really big refinery in Indiana that's been down because of a fire. They had a power outage. Then when the power came on, they had a power surge that started a fire. You know, once you have that kind of situation, you got to shut down. You got to all do this, all this testing and inspection. So it's still probably got a week to 10 days before it's coming back online. And it's one of the biggest ones. It's the second or third largest refinery in the country, like 450,000 barrels a day. But anyway, so when that comes back online and you get to the spring break period around mid-March, demand for oil-based fuels, primarily diesel, goes way up because farming equipment that, you know, has to plant our food. You do have to plant food once in a while. That all runs on diesel, and you get more people traveling just as the weather improves. So every year the spike goes up by about 2 million barrels a day for global supply. And actually, you know, inventories, U.S. and OECD inventories are in the bottom half of the five-year range. It's the opposite situation of what you got for gas, where we're above the five-year range in storage. And there's a serious diesel shortage in the whole world. And that's because Russia was providing a lot of the diesel. And also, you need more black oil to produce diesel. So we have, our distillate inventories have been running, you know, 10, 15% below the five-year average. And here we're just, you know, weeks away from, you know, the planting season, and you need all that diesel.
Well, Dan, we'll keep tabs on natural gas. We'll keep tabs on propane. We'll keep tabs on oil. We'll keep tabs on diesel. There's a lot going on, but I know you wanted to highlight a couple companies, and we like to do that every time we talk to you and do a deeper dive. And both these companies are related. Diamondback Energy traded under the ticker FANG, F-A-N-G, which is a great ticker. And then a spinout from their company, Viper Energy, Venom, V-N-O-M, also a great ticker. Let's look at Diamondback Energy first. It's one of the companies that you like to highlight that's in the Permian Basin. I know they're going through a big merger. Walk us through the value proposition in Diamondback Energy.
Okay, full disclosure, I do own both of these stocks because my own personal portfolio is definitely focused on buying companies that pay really good dividends. And I like both of them. They are classic, just classic growth and income stocks. Diamondback Energy has been one of the darlings of the Wall Street gang since it was formed 10 or 12 years ago. And its growth story is just incredible. But Diamondback Energy is in our large cap growth fund, which is called the Sweet 16. And then Viper Energy is in our high yield income portfolio. I followed both of them since they went public. And really what I like is they both have a ton of running room. Now, Diamondback, and it's a large cap pure play on the Permian Basin. It has nothing outside of the Permian Basin. On February 12th, they announced that they're going to be merging with a private company called Endeavor Energy Resources, which happens to have its home office directly across the street from Diamondback. These guys go to lunch together all the time anyway. And in a transaction that was initially valued at $26 billion, but since the deal was announced, you know, you usually see the buying company stock go down a little bit and the target company go up. Well, they both went up. So Diamond Fang on February the 12th opened at $150 a share. And today it's on Wednesday, it's over $180 a share. So a pretty nice move. And you say, well, why do you still like it? Well, first of all, at the current share price, this transaction is now a $30 billion transaction. So one of the biggest M&A things. But what it's going to do is once the merger closes, Diamondback will be the third largest oil producing company in the Permian Basin, which number one makes it a big time target company or takeover target for a super major. Let's say Shell or, you know, that like Exxon made that big deal for Pioneer. What if Shell decides they want to do that or Chevron or somebody wants to do something like that? Then Diamondback would be on their radar screen. But anyway, the consideration they're paying to Endeavor shareholders are getting $8 billion in cash, but they're also getting 117.3 million shares of Fang at closing. I mean, this is a really, really big deal that consolidates these two companies, and it's going to push their production up to over 815,000 barrels per day, or BOE per day, with 475,000 barrels of oil per day, again, making it the third highest oil producer in the Permian Basin. Now, here's why I think it's attractive. When this deal closes, this is a better, more attractive company to me anyway than Pioneer Natural Resources, which recently they're in the process of merging with ExxonMobil in a transaction that was valued at $60 billion, which is about $10 billion more than what the projected market cap of Fang is going to be when the deal closes. So Pioneer's production is about 725,000 BOE a day, 377,000 barrels of oil per day. So Diamondback's post-merger production is going to be almost 100,000 barrels a day of oil more than Pioneer's production. So just logically, you would think if you compare them together, Diamondback then has a value to a major like Exxon or Shell or somebody of $70 billion if they paid, you know, $60 billion for Pioneer. But what I really like about it, I think, don't think about it being taken over just as a great company. It's got tremendous running room. They have some of the best tier one acreage in the Permian Basin. They have, you know, a couple decades worth of high quality drilling locations. They got a great mix of production, 58% crude oil, 21% high value NGLs, and 21% natural gas. And right now, their liquids revenue is 94% of their revenue. So they're not hurt at all by these lower gas prices. And after the deal closes at the end of this year, it's expected to close in the fourth quarter of this year. So they're going to enter 2025. And based on my forecast, and they've given guidance, they've given production guidance and detailed guidance for 2025. It should generate like over $10 billion of operating cash flow, of which $5.5 billion will be free cash flow. So when you divide that by the outstanding shares, you know, that's like 30-something dollars per share. And they have publicly said they are going to return 50% of their free cash flow, which is $18.75 per share, will be returned to shareholders in a form of dividends and stock buybacks. That's over a 10% yield based on today's share price. But this thing's getting rave reviews by all of the analysts. I've looked, their five most recent analyst price target increases that have been posted by TipRanks just in last week. The lowest one is 177, but it's way lower than anybody else. And the highest one is from Neil Dingman at Truist Financial, which is a five-star, one of the most highly respected energy sector analysts. His valuation is 250 per share. So it's selling for 200 per day, and it's today, and his top price target is 250. And it pays really good dividends now for like about a 5 or 6% dividend yield now, but it's really the long-term growth potential of that one. So you got any questions about Diamondback?
No, I think you covered it all. Dan, I was going to ask you about the dividend and the sustainability there, as well as some of the price targets, but I think you covered it all there. So let's move on to, I guess we could call it Diamondback's little brother here, yeah. Viper Energy. Diamondback does hold a little over 51% of the outstanding shares of Viper. Viper is a minerals holding company, bit different than an actual producer. Take us through what you like about Viper Energy.
Well, first of all, if you have any listeners that really love, they're bullish on, you know, fossil fuels anyway, the mineral companies are the safest bet. They have no drilling liability. They own the actual minerals, and they don't expire. Minerals don't expire. So when people drill and complete wells on their land, they start getting royalty checks. And Viper was created because Diamondback did not feel that they were getting credit for their minerals. Because instead of just going out and leasing land, they were going out and actually buying people's mineral rights. So they didn't have to worry about expiration dates. And it was one of their, you know, things that was very attractive when it first went public. So they owned a lot of minerals. So a few years ago, they decided to create Viper and drop down all their minerals into Viper. Diamondback currently owns 51.2%, and they do control the company. In fact, they have conference calls, you know, in the same room together and everything. So anyway, but when the merger of Endeavor into Diamondback closes, Endeavor also owns a lot of minerals. Now, Endeavor is a private company, so, you know, they didn't need to spin off their minerals. They've owned all these minerals for a long time. And it's estimated that those minerals produce about 26,000 BOE per day of current production, and a high percentage of it is oil and liquids. And that once those go into Diamondback, Diamondback's going to drop those down into Viper. And they'll get stock, they'll get or some cash for that or something. Viper will go out and get a loan and pay them for it, whatever. But then that's going to take Viper's production. They just announced yesterday their fourth quarter results. So its current production was 43,783 BOE a day, 56% oil and 22% NGLs in the fourth quarter. But that would go up to like 70,000 BOE a day or 75,000 BOE a day if they drop all of Endeavor's minerals into Viper. Now, in addition to that, if you're familiar with the minerals company, so what you want to look at is how much drilling activity is on their acreage. Well, I listened to the conference call when they were talking about the merger, and they said they're probably going to have like 20 rigs drilling on those minerals. And they're a very aggressive driller. Diamondback's one of the most aggressive drillers in the Permian Basin. So that means in addition to getting, you know, a year from now being at 70,000 BOE per day, they're going to have steady production growth in Viper. It pays out a very high percent. I think it pays out about 60% of its free cash flow. And because it has no drilling liability or no drilling expenses, a very high percentage of their operating cash flow is free cash flow. So I think in 2025, their dividend could rise to over $3.50, maybe even $4 a share, which would be, you know, 10% dividend yield a year from now.
Yeah, Dan, that would be a pretty attractive dividend yield. And just in this area of the mineral rights, I think a lot of our listeners will be more familiar if we called it like a royalty company.
Yeah,
essentially,
they're
that's
royalty
what it
companies.
Is.
Yeah, that's what
But when you think about the lay of the land, Dan, as far as the royalty or mineral companies, you know, you've mentioned other companies on our show before, like Sitio or PHX or Blackstone or Kimbrel. And in Canada, there's Freehold Royalties and Prairie Sky and Topaz. Where does Viper fit into the whole universe of these mineral and royalty stocks?
Well, of the four we follow, it's the largest by far, and it's the most heavily weighted to oil. And that's why I like it the most. And it's the most, and it's also the most secure because of its relationship with Diamondback. Diamondback purposely does drill on their minerals. You know, they think about it, when Venom makes distributions, 51.2% of those payouts go to Diamondback. So they want to drill on their minerals, and Endeavor's going to be the same way. So they're focusing on those lands where they own the mineral rights, and that what that does, that guarantees that you're gonna have production growth. Now, so you said Sitio and Kimbrel and that. See, they don't have this kind of relationship with a big upstream company. You know, maybe they, you know, are friends with some of them, but there's no direct ownership in their company by somebody who wants to go drill purposely on their land. So I think that's a big plus for Viper.
All right, Dan, thank you, as always, for spending time with us, sharing some of your insights and some of the companies that you follow in the Energy Prospectus group. Look, there's a lot of companies that you follow, always identified into different categories depending on what the investor is looking for. So I will post a link to the Energy Prospectus group so everyone who's listening who wants to dive a bit more into oil and natural gas companies and the sector, they can follow you there. Dan, again, thank you very much for your time on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. We'll be back with you full-time next week. Be sure to visit our website, kereport.com, and podcast the KE Report to stay up to date with all our daily editorials and company updates. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.